How was that? Did you enjoy? Nice. That had nothing to do with my instructions. It's all the power of meditation is inside of you. You don't really need anybody to guide you in meditation, because many of you have been listening to these talks and meditations before, and you know already what to do. You don't need to much more to be told. Some people, they doubt their own capacity in meditation, and that's why I tell you that you actually have all the power inside of you and you don't need to hear anymore. So maybe I don't have to give a talk tonight. No, I will. Last week I was also giving some meditation instructions, and the people asked me before the meditation, would you like to give a talk? And as monks, we always try to be honest. So I said, no, I don't like to give the talk. I would just like to sit here and meditate and be peaceful and quiet, because that is what I love as a monk. But I also actually love to give talks as well. So I gave a talk and I enjoyed it as well. And I think I will enjoy giving tonight's talk as well. Sometimes when more junior monks like me are invited to give a talk, people wonder, will it be a good talk? Will Sunyo be a good speaker, or will he be a bad speaker? And even myself, I started thinking earlier today, will I please give a good talk? Then the people will like it. And then I realized half of my talks will be below average. You know, that's the definition of average. Half of it will be below, half of it will be above. And maybe that's a good attitude to have towards everything in life. Half of the things you do in life will be below average. And half of the things other people will do for you in life will also be below average. Half of your meditations will be below average. Half of the windows will open up. And that might be a good attitude to have, because we always tend to expect much more from life than it can actually give us. I was speaking to my parents the other day on Skype. My parents live in the Netherlands. And they were renovating their bathroom. And, well, they obviously had a lot of stress from renovating the bathroom. They weren't even doing it themselves, but they had people hired to fix the bathroom, like mortar workers and plumbers and stuff. And my father was quite upset, because there was a crack in one of the tiles and they couldn't replace it anymore. A crack in one of the brand new tiles. But then maybe you can also realize half of the plumbers, half of the mortar workers is also below average. So maybe we can expect in life that things go wrong. And maybe we can expect that life is not perfect. And if we realize this, that life is not perfect, that life doesn't grant us what we wish all the time, then we can be more at peace with life. And this is sort of what made me become a monk. The realization that life is a lot of difficulties. And why would I make more difficulties for myself by being a layperson? That's what I thought when I was a layperson. So today I would like to talk on the most asked question in the whole of Buddhism. Well, at least in my experience. Venerable, what is the most asked question that you have gotten? he didn't have many questions yet. Maybe after the talk, when you all line up for questions, you can all come to Venerable and ask him your questions. Well, the most often asked question of me is, why did you become a monk? And it's been asked so often that I thought maybe I should talk about that, so I can just refer people to this talk on the YouTube in the future and I don't have to explain it anymore. So why did I become a monk? Well, it's not an easy question to answer, because there's lots of reasons, but I was always inspired by monks and people living in solitude. I don't know why. Maybe it's a past life or something. But I remember that my father, he used to read me bedtime stories when I was a little boy. I hope people still do that nowadays, and that they don't do everything with iPods and whatever, but that parents still take time to read bedtime stories to their children, because those are some of my fondest memories. My father reading bedtime stories. And one of the books that was my favorite book was a Dutch book, and you won't know it, but it was called Pluk van de Pettenflat. And that is about a little boy who had a crane car, and he used that crane car to help all the animals that were stuck in the swamp and that kind of stuff, to pull them out. It doesn't matter. But the most favorite part of that story was, for me, when Pluk, that was the name of the boy, it's not even a common name in the Netherlands, just like a funny name, you know. But when Pluk went to see the hermit, because he needed a solution, because all the adults were becoming too childish, and he needed the hermit to find out a solution. But every time the hermit came up in the story, I was like, yeah, the hermit, what is he about? And there were also drawings in the book, and the hermit was living in the tree, and he had all these signs in front. Keep out, leave me alone, I'm in solitude. And I was always fascinated by that, because people in general are not inclined to solitude. Not often, anyway. Not in the way that hermits are, that people like Venerable Patipada and me are. And also the hermit in that book was also portrayed as being a weirdo. So maybe we are also weirdos, Venerable, but I like being weird. So I was always inspired by monks and hermits already. And another way that I know that I was inspired by monks is that when I was a little boy, my parents used to take me and my brother on holidays to Belgium. I come from the Netherlands, so Belgium is quite close, but compared to the Netherlands, Belgium is very exotic, because they actually have hills, you know. In the Netherlands, everything is as flat as a pancake, and there's no hills at all. But in Belgium, you have hills and forests, so that was already very cool. But what was even cooler is that in Belgium, they have a lot of Christian monasteries. And my father is in a lot of these stories, because he is a very important person in my life. My father used to like to go to these monasteries. You know why? Because they used to make the beer. The monks in those monasteries, many of those Christian monasteries, they brew their own beer. So you have all these special kinds of beer, and people like to taste all the kinds of beer. And I also enjoyed going to those monasteries with my father and my mother and brother. but not to see the bear, but to see the monks. And I was so fascinated. Why do these people live in that way? And something drew me to them. And even once, we went to a monastery called Leffe, an abbey, maybe is the better word instead of monastery. An abbey called Leffe. And they make quite a famous beer. Maybe they even sell it here in Australia. I don't know. Do any of you know it? You know it? Yeah. So we went to the Leffe Abbey. It was also my favorite brand when I was still drinking beer. And also my father's favorite brand of beer. So especially my father was looking forward to seeing how do they brew Leffe beer in the monastery. And we came into the monastery and this gray old monk, all bent over and crooked, looked at us and said, "Welcome to the Leffe Monastery. I know many of you have come to see how we brew beer." And my father, yes, I saw him rise up. "I want to know and taste the beer." And the monk said, "However, we've stopped brewing the beer a long time ago. And we sold our name to a professional company miles away. And now we receive the money for selling our name." And I saw my father disappointed. And then the monk said, "But I will show you how we live in this monastery nowadays." And I was, yes, that's what I want to know. I don't care about the beer, actually. I want to know how the monks live. And that, I was still quite young, but that memory stayed with me for a long time because the place was so peaceful, so different from life that I was used to. They had a very, peaceful atmosphere. And even though I was not a Christian as a layperson, I wasn't even into Buddhism yet at the time because I was still a little boy, you know. It inspired me a lot. But I don't think that is the reason per se that I became a monk, but something was already there. Does it inspire you to see monks and nuns? Maybe it does, otherwise you wouldn't be here. But, yeah. So that monastery and was in a way very similar to Bodhinyana Monastery where I live. The monks were sheltered from a lot of things in life. A lot of things that can distract and a lot of things that can take them away from spiritual life. And there is this little story that I like to reflect upon. From Aesop's fable. Do you know Aesop? I think he was Greek, wasn't he? Yeah, a Greek writer wrote a lot of these nice little fables with animals in them. I like those kind of tales with animals in them. And in this story, there were two little mice who met at the edge of a city. They never met before, and one of the mice was the country mice. He lived outside of the city. And the other mouse, was the city mouse who lived in the city. And they came together and said, "Beep," said the city mouse. "Nice to meet you. What is your life like in the countryside?" And the country mouse said, "Beep, my life in the country is like this. In the morning I wake up and I go searching for some grains of wheat to eat. Then I eat the wheat, I go back in my little tiny hole. And then in the afternoon I come out again, look for some grains of wheat, and I go back in my hole. And in the evening, I go out again and look for some grains of wheat, and I eat, and I go back in my hole. And that's what my life is like as a mouse in the countryside. And the city mouse was surprised. Huh? Beep, you live like that in the countryside? That sounds very deprived. You should come with me into the city one day, and I will show you what life in the city is like. Come, let's go to my home, which is close by. So the little two mouse, trippy, 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 they went into the house of the city mouse. And the city mouse brought all kinds of lovely food out for the country mouse. The best cheese in town, pieces of grape, bread. What else do mice eat? They eat everything, don't they? So he brought everything, the best. Crackers, olives, I don't know, everything. And the two mice were enjoying the food together. And said the city mouse, see, it's much better to live in the city. Beep, 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 beep. Do mouse say beep also in English? In the Netherlands they say beep, but sometimes the sounds of animals are different, you know, in different languages. Like Dutch dogs, they say buff. Yeah, I don't know, what do Australian dogs say? Woof. Okay, oh, that's quite similar then. Anyway, I don't know why I'm talking about that. Let's get back to our mice, because they were still eating. They had so much to eat, they can wait a little bit while I'm talking. But they were eating all day the loveliest of food, and they became a very fat mice. But then, suddenly, while they were eating, the lady of the house got home, and she saw the two mice, and she took her broom and started trying to swipe the mice and get them away. Get out of my house, stupid mice. And then the two mice, they went trippy-trip, ran all across the room and had to hide in this small hole to keep safe from the lady with the broom. And the city mice were still, city mouse, mice, this is difficult for me, mouse and mice. The city mouse was still smiling. See, life in the city, you get so much nice food. But the country mouse realized, no, life in the countryside, maybe we don't get as much different food. Maybe it's not as sensually pleasant, but it's much more safe. We are safe from the dangers of people trying to hit us with brooms, and we don't have to hide in little holes all the time. And today, Venerable Patipada and me, we are like the country mice. We decided to live a life with less sensual pleasures, with less things to enjoy ourselves. But in return, we get a life that is, in a sense, more safe. A life that is more peaceful. A life where we don't have to run away from angry bosses and angry spouses that try. I hope your spouse doesn't try to hit you with a broom, but sometimes maybe they do. Anyway, we don't have those problems. Maybe another monk tries to hit you with a broom, I don't hope so. Usually not. Bodhinyana is a very peaceful place. So that is why people decide to become monks. One of the reasons, anyway, is to have a simpler life, maybe less sensually pleasant, but in exchange, we get a lot of peace and a lot of simplicity. We don't have to do so much. There's not as much expectations, not as much people trying to attack us in a way. I was walking with another monk
to the forest a couple of days ago, and he used to be very much into business and law and all these kind of things when he was a lay person. And he said, when I was a lay person, when I had an idea for the company or whatever, we always used to argue a lot, and there was a lot of competition. It was very stressful. And some of you will recognize that. But now I am a monk. When I have an idea, I just offer it. And if people don't like it, then it's okay with me, because there's no competition in monastic life. You don't have to have the best ideas, or you don't have to win anything. So this makes our life also more peaceful. Now I'm talking a lot about monks' life, but I hope from this talk, well, maybe some of you get inspired to become monks or nuns as well. That would be the best talk I've ever given, if that would be the result. But I expect that many of you won't. If you do, that, please let me know. But I hope from this talk you, maybe if you don't become a monk or a nun, you learn to make your own life a bit more like our lives. You can imitate a little bit, move closer to the countryside if you are a city mouse, in a way. And I don't mean it physically, but mentally. Try to make your life less about the sensual pleasures, less about arguments, less about fights and that stuff, and more about finding peace within yourself. Do you think that's a good idea? Yeah, because peace is actually the highest happiness, is what the Buddha said. And if I am to come back to the reason why I became a monk, it's not because of stories that my father used to read me, or because of visiting monasteries in Belgium. It's actually because I realized that peace is the highest happiness. And I realized this while I was still a student in university. I studied mechanical engineering, and I just started my master's degree in mechanical engineering. And one day, I don't know how I can put this properly, but I really realized about peace through my meditation. Sometimes people have extraordinary experiences in meditation, something very unlike normal life, something that totally blows them away, something that changes their life forever. And those are the people that usually want to become monastics. And to me, something happened that totally blew my life apart in a way, totally changed my whole view of what happiness is and what suffering is. And this was in part due to listening to Ajahn Brahm's teachings as well. I used to listen to him through the internet. So when that happened, I knew I had to become a monk. And I went to my parents, all happy. I am gonna let them know about the purpose of my life, about becoming a monk. And they will be so happy that I have finally found my purpose. Well, I was very happy to study mechanical engineering, but they didn't know that now I found my true purpose in life. So I went to my parents and said, "Hey, parents." I didn't say, "Hey, parents," but that's a bit weird to say, "Hey, parents." But I said, "Listen, I want to become a monk. I'm going to stop studying.
And my parents, did they respond the way I thought they would?
No. Unfortunately. Well, maybe not, maybe fortunately. They said, no, we want you to finish your degree first. And most of you might know that if you want to become a bhikkhu or bhikkhuni, it's tradition that you have to have your parents' permission. So I knew that already. So I was like, damn it! Now I can't become a monk. Or maybe I finish my studies first, I suggested, and then I can decide what I want to do. So we made a deal. I finish my studies, and then I am free to do whatever I want. So, 2 more years it took me to finish my degree. And you know how hard it is to finish a degree in engineering if you know you want to be a monk? And you know you're studying stuff that you're never gonna use ever again. Or at least you think you will. That was very, very difficult. So I had to find new ways to motivate me to study engineering. When I started studying engineering, I imagined being a rich inventor, driving a Ferrari, and doing all these fancy calculations and inventing stuff. But now I no longer had those dreams. So I had to refocus and rethink the way I thought about educating myself, because I had to finish it, you know, because you love your parents. So what did I do? Instead of studying for myself, I decided I would study for my parents. I would do it all for them. My degree was no longer my degree, although it has my name on it. It should really be my parents' degree. Should really have my mother and father's name on it, because I did it for them. And that was surprisingly much more motivating than doing something for myself. I had much better grades in the last 2 years of my studies than I had before, and I always had decent grades, but then I really had good grades, and I studied much more as well. Well, maybe also because I was single at the time and no longer living with my girlfriend, so I had much more spare time to study, but it was mainly because of the motivation. And maybe sometimes in life you also have to do something you don't like to do and that you don't want to do. And you think, oh, how can I motivate myself to do this difficult job that I don't want to do? And maybe reflect upon, it's my suggestion, doing it for others, doing it for your parents, your friends, your children, instead of doing it for yourself. In my experience, that really helps a lot in motivating yourself. So, from that time on, my studies went really well, and I finished with a good grades, and I was happy to finish. I still remember the day that I received my degree. It was snowing outside, and after receiving my degree, I stepped out of the door into the snow, or the door of the university building into the snow behind my parents. And I felt so relieved. I was done with this burden of university, which for me stood for lay life. Because now I realized I could become a monk. I was free to become a monk. So I never worked as an engineer, although I studied engineering. After my degree, I came to Australia, to this inspiring figure, Ajahn Brahm, to ordain with him. And I'm talking a lot about myself, I know, but There is this American philosopher called Thoreau who wrote in his book called Walden, if I speak more of myself than is becoming, then my defense is that I speak for humanity rather than myself. And that means he was going to speak about himself a lot, but he hoped that it would inspire other people and that it would be of benefit to others to talk about himself. And that book is really nice, by the way, because it's also about solitude. And he went to live in a hut by himself and had a more simple life. And I also had a very simple sensual life. He decided to only drink water, for example. And when I was a layperson and when I decided to become a monk, so 2 years before I finished my master's studies, I also made another decision. I would, as a layperson, also try to live, not exactly as a monk, but less of a sensual life. And more of a spiritual life than I already was meditating and stuff, but you know, you keep 4.5 precepts, like you drink the occasional beer or whatever. But from then, I decided to keep the 5 precepts, drink no longer beer, and also reduce other sensual pleasures. Stop listening to as much music and stuff. And you know, when you're a student and you decide to stop drinking beer, then you find out who your real friends are. Because some of my, quote, friends, when I told them that I was no longer going to be drinking with them, they looked at me disgusted, really. Like, what are you doing? Are you even human being still? And like, the Netherlands was playing some kind of soccer final or whatever it was, and I was going to watch it. And they were all drinking beer, and I said no. And I was really the outcast of that group of people who were watching the soccer. So I decided not to go with those people anymore. And instead, some of my other friends, when I told them I'm no longer drinking beer, they're like, beer or other alcohol, of course. They're like, ah, interesting. Tonight when we go out to party, I will also stop drinking beer just because you are trying. And that were some of my friends that I stayed with. Of course, I also had some Buddhist friends who were already keeping the 5 precepts. So with them, it was also easy. They even went to non-alcoholic bars and stuff. But I know it's a bit of random, but maybe for you, some of you, you're also struggling with that precept to stop drinking beer or other alcohol. And one of the ways to make it easier is to find the right people to hang out with. Shall we put in a little joke about alcohol? So, how do all jokes about alcohol start, Nicholas? With a toast, maybe, but also with a man walks into a bar. Isn't that how all those jokes start? So a man walks into a bar, sits down in front of the bar and says, please give me 5 of your finest whiskeys. 5 glasses of whiskey. So the bartender is a bit surprised, but okay, 5 glasses of whiskeys, why not? He makes a lot of money from that. So 5 glasses it is. And the man goes and drinks. 1, 2, 3. Well, he goes a bit slower than that, but he drinks them all. After drinking 5 glasses of whiskey, he says, ah, that was nice. Now, please, can I have 4 glasses of your finest gin? Okay, 4 glasses of the finest gin. Gluck, gluck, gluck. Takes him a while, but after that he says, ah, can I have 3 glasses of the best wine? Okay, 3 glasses of wine. Gluck, gluck, gluck. All down the hatch, as they say. Down the drain, down the hatch. He drinks it all anyway. Then he says, give me 2 glasses of your finest martini. Okay, two glasses of martini it is. Look, look. And he says, one glass of your finest champagne. One glass of champagne. Look, look, look. Says the waiter, you've been drinking quite a lot. And the man says, well, I had a good night, but it's weird, you know. The waiter says, weird? What is weird? Well, the less I drink, the more drunk I get. You know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So if you want to drink less, don't use that strategy. Doesn't work, I don't think. Anyway, what am I even talking about? We don't really prepare much for these talks, so sometimes they're a little bit random, but I hope you get some, at least some laughter and some inspiration out of it. But anyway, to get back to the topic, why I became a monk, and me already giving up sensual pleasures as a lay person, and I hope that some of you will also try that. And I'm still really proud of some of the things I did as a layperson to renounce sensual pleasures. It really brings me joy still. Not just giving up alcohol, but once I was with my friends, study group, where I used to be on the board, and it was called Taylor, after the mathematician Brooke Taylor. Some of you might know from the Taylor series. Any mathematicians here? No, nobody knows. But he's very famous. So that was the name of our student group. But on the wall of our office, we did not have posters of Brooke Taylor, but of Taylor Swift. Because we, you know, studying engineering, it's only boys, you know. And there's no girls were there almost. So that's why we could do that kind of posters on the wall of Taylor Swift. Anyway, we went on this study trip in England, and what we did was visiting all technical companies where we could maybe apply for a job or something like that. So we went visiting Airbus and that kind of companies. But at night, of course, we didn't visit companies, we would go and party. And I would come along, and one of the parties, a really beautiful girl came up to me. And she was really into me, obviously. And she wanted what girls and boys do sometimes. And I remembered, no, I want to be a monk. So I did dance a little bit, but that was it. And I just said goodbye to the girl. And the way I tell it, it doesn't sound very inspiring to you, maybe. But to me, that was really a big thing. You know, because the Buddha also said, for most men, the looks and smell of girls is the most tempting of all the sensual pleasures in the world. And I was able to renounce it because I wanted to prepare for monastic life as much as possible and to renounce that kind of thing as well. And maybe for some of you bachelors who are desperate to find a spouse because they think it will bring you happiness in life, then realize that there is another option. You don't have to become a monk or a nun, but to live a bachelor life is actually somewhat like living the life of the mouse in the countryside. Your life becomes less of a problem. Because once you live with two people, you got twice the problems. If you just live by yourself, you only got one times the problem. And that is one of the things that I realized as a lay person. So maybe that goes part ways to answering the question I've been asked the most. Why did you become a monk? And the answers are to live a more simple life, a life that's aimed towards finding happiness in peace and simplicity, in solitude and letting go, rather than happiness through achievements or sensual pleasures or other things that most people pursue. And I hope to live this life until I die. And I hope also to give maybe many more talks at the Buddhist Society of WA. And maybe one day, who knows, I will be like Ajahn Brahm, being a monk for 50 years. Wow, isn't that inspiring to know? And Ajahn Brahm, is he suffering from being a monk, you think? Being so deprived? No, he's very happy to be a monk, and he can't be anything else anymore. So one day, hopefully, I'll be like that as well. And that is my aspiration. And you will all have your own aspirations in life. And I said already, many of you won't inspire to be a monk or a nun, and that is perfectly fine. Please know I give this talk not to say that monks or nuns are better or something like that. We're just different. We're just weird, you know. You are normal, we are weird. But you have your own aspirations in life. And I hope to have inspired you a little bit through my personal story to commit to your aspirations. As a lay person, I really committed to finishing my studies and to the life of becoming a monk. And to be totally honest and tell you a little secret, I also tell this story to remind myself of why I became a monk. Because we come up here, we give inspiring talks, hopefully, maybe sometimes bad talks, but we try to always be inspiring. And you think maybe monks and nuns are always happy and always inspired by the Buddha's words. But sometimes, being a monk already for over 8 years, you have periods where you lose a little bit of your inspiration. And you need to fire it up again. And so I felt a little bit like that lately. I never doubted that I was going to be a monk. I never wanted to be a layperson for the last 8 years. But sometimes, you know, monastic life is not all flowers and roses and sunshine. Sometimes it's just hard. It is just hard sometimes. And so I gave this talk secretly to myself, to remind myself why I became a monk, why I made the decision, and what I aspire to be like. To be like the country mouse, and be hopefully like Ajahn Brahm, and hopefully even more like the Buddha someday. Peaceful, no matter what happens, always happy. As Sunyo, the empty, Sunyo means empty, empty monk, with no desires, no ill will, no delusion, who knows. And you can all achieve those things as well. So thank you all for listening and letting me vent. Thank you all. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Is that all? You know, have you not seen Ajahn Brahm before? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, that's more like it. Thank you. Now, if there's any questions, you can ask Venerable Patipada.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. She speaks Polish, you know, and I know a little bit of Polish. Dziękuję means thank you. Thank you for handing me the tablet. You know the movie Borat? Maybe you don't want to know. In case you don't know, don't look it up. But in case you do know, Borat, he is from Kazakhstan, but he actually speaks Polish. It's funny. The words he says are actually Polish. Anyway, well, that doesn't matter, but I thought it was funny. So, questions. Christina from Malta asked, or Christine, sorry, from Malta asked, why does it feel easier to be distracted and less alert than in enhanced awareness? It feels very tiring to be in a state of alert stillness or conscious awareness. Okay, Christina, so this is a question more about meditation, and those are always very good questions. So to summarize, Christine asked, why does it feel easy for her to be distracted, thinking a lot, and it's hard to be still? Well, if that is the case, then maybe you're trying too hard to be still. To be still is not something you do. If it feels tiring, as you say, you're going about it in the wrong way. Maybe some teacher has told you, really focus on this or that, focus on the body, concentrate on the breath. And if you concentrate, I don't know, have any of you been to school? If you concentrate really hard all day long, at the end of the day, you're really tired. But meditation is not about concentration. Meditation is about letting things come to you. We let go of the distractions and let the mind be in a more natural state where it just automatically stays with the breath or automatically stays with the peace or whatever your object of meditation is. And it might feel easier to be distracted because that is like your normal way of being. You know, you go through life planning, thinking, doing stuff, and then when you sit down to meditate, you think to yourself, now I should be quiet. I should be still because that is what my meditation is about. But you still have that all that energy, that tendency inside yourself of being restless, of thinking. I sometimes compare it to a freight train that is moving and has to stop. Does a freight train stop immediately when they pull the brakes? No, it takes quite a long time for a train to come to a stop. The mind is like a freight train sometimes. It's moving and it has a momentum. And you cannot, unfortunately, just sit down and be immediately peaceful if the mind has that kind of momentum. You need to give it some time and ease into it. So don't set yourself a goal to be in a state of enhanced awareness or alert stillness. Instead, ideally, you just don't have any goals. You're just happy to be there, whether you're thinking or not. And when you're happy to be there, you are content. And being content, you'll find there's less things to worry about. There's less things to plan because you're already happy. And then the mind becomes more still, automatically. And I say more still because if your mind is anything like I used to be, then often we think in polarities. Either I am restless or I am peaceful.
But there is a whole graduation in between, you know. And often it's better to reflect upon our meditation as, have I become a little bit more peaceful than I was before, rather than, am I now in enhanced awareness? Yeah, just improve it a tiny little bit, and that is already perfect. Not many people in the world do that. And if you keep becoming a little bit more still, then the Buddha said, drop by drop, the bucket is filled. A tiny bit more peace every time you meditate. Almost a noticeable amount. Drop by drop, the bucket is filled. Drop by drop, the peace grows. So don't set any goals like that of enhanced awareness or whatever. Next question from Satsangat. If there is no self, what is the purpose of life? I could also ask, if there is a self, what is the purpose of life? So what is the purpose of life? And I found out. One day I was sitting in my hut and I realized what the goal of life is, or the purpose of life. The purpose of life, according to Sunyo, is to learn to accept that life has no purpose. Life is life, as a famous band once sang. I don't know what, Duran Duran or something, no? What, life is life, la 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 la. Life is life, la 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 la. Life is just life. And nobody put you on this earth with a specific purpose. Like you have to do this in life. That's the purpose of life. Luckily, because if you had a purpose in life, you would have to do it, you know. You would have to, it's your purpose, you have to do it, you have no choice. Luckily, life has no purpose, and we can give it our own meaning, our own purpose. But the ultimate purpose is to realize that life is a natural process, and we came into being because we were reborn, and the ultimate peace is to not be reborn again and to end the cycle of life by realizing that there is no ultimate purpose to it. And I know that might sound challenging to some of you, but some people want to find the meaning of life. But according to Buddhism, there is no such purpose. Does that challenge you? No? Some of you are like, oh, whatever, you know. No purpose. I feel like life has no purpose already. So. But sometimes, though, if I say life has no purpose, people will respond, maybe, by becoming depressed. Oh, my life has no purpose. If that is your response, then you don't think about it like that. Sometimes you need to give life a purpose. If you have children, then please make it your life's purpose to take care of your children. Also make it your life purpose to take care of yourself. Because if we don't have any kind of those purposes that we make ourselves, sometimes we become very lethargic. And it seems like life is totally meaningless. And being depressed and lethargic, we cannot really find happiness. And we cannot properly meditate. And if we don't properly meditate, we cannot properly understand that life actually has no purpose. Okay. Those are maybe some deep questions that deserve a whole Dhamma talk of their own. So I'll leave it at that. I hope that helps.
question to Venerable doesn't say, oh, it's from Jay Bowen. Does thought determine happiness? How do we reprogram negative mindset to be more positive? Yes, our thoughts do in a large part determine how we feel in general, whether we feel happy or sad, whether we feel angry or kind. I started this talk by saying half of my talks will be below average. And I said that to think about it more, expecting less of myself, you know? And I am more happy when I realize that some of my talks will be bad, you know, because it relieves me of having to be a good talker or whatever. So one way to be more positive about life is to expect less from life. When we think life should be like that, it has to be like this. I am married, so my partner should care about me. My parents should treat me kindly. I work hard, so I should get a raise. What else is there? All your shoulds that you have in life, all your expectations of how life should be. Try to rethink them. Think differently about life. Yeah, because you work hard, should you get a raise? Who told you that you should get a raise? It's only in your head that you should get a raise because you work hard. And if you actually rethink that and think, if I work hard, I might get a raise, then you expect less. And if you expect less from life, then suddenly, actually, it's a bit counterintuitive, but life seems to give you more. You have less expectations, so even the small things in life become like big gifts. I told you before the story of the countryside, mice. Why? It's like sheep and sheep as well. That's also difficult. Sheeps? No. Anyway, the country mouse, I said that's like us. I mean, the country mouse has only the simple grains to eat. However, maybe by us I mean Venerable Pattibhadrami. But maybe that wasn't the best analogy, because if you ever come to Bodhinyana Monastery for the lunch, or you see the breakfast in Dhammaloka, then you will realize that at that time we are very much like city mouse, aren't we, Venerable? Like, we have so many choices. Why was I saying this? Oh yeah, because even though every day in Bodhinyana there is so much choice of food for the monks, I try to expect that there may be no food today. Maybe today nobody will come. No, forget about us. And people will not bring any food, and today I will go hungry. It never happened, but if I think like that, wow, then every day I am so happy for every dish that somebody brought. Maybe even if it's just plain rice or a loaf of bread. Oh, yes! Yes, people thought about me. Sadhu, I'm so happy. So I lower my expectations to the minimum, and I become more happy, actually, as a result. But if I go to lunchtime and, there should be this nice vegan curry that is usually here on Friday. I hope I should be here again today. Yummy, yummy. If I think like that,
then the curry isn't there. Ah, oh, I'm so disappointed. And even if it's there, it's not the same than if I didn't expect it in the first place. So how do we reprogram to be more positive, Jay? One answer is, there's many ways, but one answer is to expect less from life. Ajahn Brahm says, happiness is, what is it again? Happiness is,
asking from the world what it can't give you.
Oh, suffering is, yes, that's why I got confused. Suffering, maybe I don't listen to Ajahn Brahm as well as I think. Suffering is from is asking from the world what it can't give you. Yeah. So happiness is the opposite. Okay. One last question. Do we really have to have our parents' consent to be a monastic? When I was talking, I said that you have to have your parents' consent to be a monastic. So that's where this question comes from. So I asked my parents to become a monk. And the answer is actually no. Ajahn Chah ordained people whose parents did not want to have them become monks. And he did so, he said, those parents did not have the best intentions for you, so we can ordain you anyway. And also monks in Bodhinyana, like Ajahn Brahmali, have said, if it really happens one day that people want to ordain but their parents are stubbornly refusing for stupid reasons, then we can ordain them anyway. Because, you know, there is, in the ordination procedure, people ask you questions, the monks ask you questions, like, do you have your parents' permission, is one of the questions. And then even if you answer no, the Sangha of monks or nuns can technically still decide to ordain you anyway. So don't worry if you don't have your parents' consent, it's still possible. But it is, in my experience, a bit of relief if you can get your parents' consent. Because with your parents' blessing, it feels more right to be a monk. However, if your parents are very stubborn, then, you know, some people just don't get it, you know. Well, my parents also didn't get it in the beginning, although they gave me permission to become a monk. They were still very skeptical, but I've seen them grow over the years, and they've even visited Bodhinyana Monastery once, and now they are eager to come again. Yeah, so they really see that I am happy as a monk, and they really became more supportive. So maybe your parents will also change your mind if you are Buddhist for longer and they see that you're happy. So, thank you for those questions from online. I should have asked first, are there any questions from the hall, actually? Because you're more important people to me, because I can actually see you right here. I don't know who is Jay Bowen, unfortunately, but I know some of you. Do you have any questions? No, no questions. In that case, I thank you for your attention. And if you want to, you can come tomorrow to meditate more. Come to Sunday, then I will talk more about the deep meditations as well on the sutta class. Thank you all. Let's now pay respect to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha together.
Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddham Bhagavantam Abhivademi. Vakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammam Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savagasango Sangam Namami.
I hope people won't forget about us tomorrow for lunch. No. The Thai people are so fair.